Cincinnati-Nebraska game that I'll be calling tomorrow night at Arrowhead. That is exactly where my mind went. Because if I was going to a game for my alma mater, for Georgia Tech, I'm bringing my fiance. I'm bringing my wife. He should bring his because I want the ratings, to be honest with you. But not really. Like, good for them. They look happy. A couple of kids madly in love.
It's great. I love it. I knew you'd have thoughts on that. Let me ask you a question about Cincinnati and Nebraska. While I've got you, while we're talking about that, I was going to wait till later, but we'll do it now. I think this is a fascinating matchup because I have big, high hopes for Nebraska. It's the big Matt Rhule year three. And then you got Scott Satterfield sort of hanging on for dear life in some ways at Cincinnati. And yet Vegas thinks it's a one-score game. What in your mind are some of the things that you're locked in this matchup?
I think chief among the interest is the development of Dylan Raiola, who started out phenomenally last year, really slowed down, which led to the changing in offensive coordinator, going from Marcus Satterfield to Dana Holgorsen. Now Dana Holgorsen has had his hands on the playbook for an entire offseason. You know, it'll be interesting to see how he blends what he did previously, air raid, you know, 11 or 10 personnel, so either one back, one tight end, or one back, no tight ends, four wide receivers, shotgun, at times tempo, how he blends that with Nebraska and what they have been. Matt Rhule doesn't want to be that. Dylan Raiola doesn't want to be that. Like, it is going to be more pro-style. There's going to be more multiple tight end sets. So how do they blend those two things is going to be fascinating for me. And on the Cincinnati side, it was an offense that was pretty good as long as you didn't play man coverage against them last year. Starting really in the Colorado game, Colorado was a great man coverage team. When you have Travis Hunter and you have DJ McKinney, who are two NFL corners, DJ McKinney's still there, you can lock people up in man-to-man. And starting in that game, people really started to challenge Cincinnati. They were 5-2 at the time. And then after that, they really hit a skid. They ended up not bowl eligible, going 5-7. And a lot of it had to do with their inability to get open in man coverage. They went and rejuvenated that wide receiver room with a lot of speed, so they're more optimistic that they'll be able to get open. And Brandon Sorsby is a good quarterback, man. Like, statistically, was the fifth best quarterback in the Big 12 last year by QBR. So I am interested to see how he as a dual threat can evolve with this new group of receivers.
Awesome stuff from Roddy Jones. Check him out on ESPN. He's going to be calling lots of games this year with Mark Jones, Quint Kesnick in there. And of course, the Nebraska-Cincinnati game. We'll have more thoughts on that coming up later on. I'm curious. We've been talking a lot of LSU-Clemson, and people have been in this discussion about who needs the game more, Roddy. And I said, I don't think either team, like, desperately needs the game in the context of this season, or a loss would be, like, crushing to all of your hopes and dreams. But Ben made a good point. Brian Kelly needs this. Dabo probably doesn't, just as an employee of the institution that they work for. In your mind, is that why LSU maybe needs this a little more? Or do you think Clemson needs this more for the SEC stuff and the back on the national perch? Like, where do you stand in that conversation?
I think the ACC needs Clemson, needs the game more than the SEC. And LSU needs to win the game more than Clemson does. I look at, yes, the Brian Kelly thing's a big one. Like, if the reputation for Brian Kelly continues to be can't win openers, that is something that they're going to look at. And, like, that is something that's going to concern people at LSU. But if LSU loses to Clemson and goes on to go to the college football playoff, then I think all is forgiven. Everything's fine. The thing is, if you look at their SEC schedule, and I'm doing this off the top of my head, so if I get one of these wrong, let me know. But they've got a trip to Alabama, a trip to Ole Miss, a trip to Oklahoma at the end of the year. And then there's one more tricky one in there. They also play Florida. So I don't think LSU gets out of the SEC with less than two losses. I don't think that's going to happen. So for that reason, if you're looking at college football playoff, which is the measuring stick for Brian Kelly, LSU needs to win the game. My mantra for the college football playoff is win 10 and you're in. If you don't win 10, then you're in the hands of the committee. You're on the bubble. I don't know that LSU will get on the right side of the bubble if that is indeed the case, just based on history, because typically throughout history, 10-win teams get in or are in the top 12 and would get in a playoff, and 9-win teams are just on the outside looking in. So for that reason, mainly schedule-driven, and LSU's tough conference road schedule, I think LSU needs the game more to get to the college football playoff.
You know, I love how you frame that from a conference standpoint. Let me, one more on conferences. You know, we talked about this. I think there's this idea that, like, and I think Greg Sankey has sort of furthered this, and some of the commentary, a lot of the commentary surrounding SEC teams in the offseason has furthered this, that, like, SMU and Indiana and Alabama had the same record, and they put SMU and Indiana in, they didn't put Alabama in, and no one's ever thought about strength of schedule before, and we should start thinking about it, because it's a neat concept. I think people don't know that Indiana was two games better than Alabama, and SMU in a regular season was two games better than Alabama. And so I think there's this angst that, like, these SEC teams aren't going to get in, when in fact, Roddy, isn't it true that, like, for example, LSU, they can get in at 9-3 a lot easier than Clemson can, a lot easier than Miami can, a lot easier than some of these others? I mean, aren't we sort of operating that the SEC teams, by and large, are getting an extra mulligan that nobody else is getting?
Yeah, if you look at each, like, level, the undefeated teams aside, because Ohio State was ranked highly, but I think when Texas was undefeated, they were the highest ranked on undefeated.
Yes.
But, like, if you go and you look throughout the schedule, throughout the season, if you looked at the undefeated teams, the highest ranked one was an SEC team. You look at the one loss team, the highest ranked one was an SEC team. You look at the two loss teams, the highest ranked one was an SEC team. Throughout most of the year, there may have been some exceptions, and it may have ended up differently. But I remember thinking last year, like, the SEC is getting basically an extra game in terms of consideration. For no other sample set is a three-loss team compared against a two-loss team. Like, we just look at it, we're like, that team got three losses. They're in a different bucket. But we include the SEC teams in the bucket above them, in the loss with one less loss, with the teams with one less loss above them. So I do think the SEC has gotten at least some portion of a mulligan. Last year was an interesting year because you had Clemson beat SMU, really because you had Clemson lose to South Carolina the way they did and then beat SMU in the championship game. Like, in a normal year, Clemson probably, in that situation with where they were on the field when that interception was thrown, like, Clemson at least has a coin flip chance to win the game. And the way that they were playing offensively probably wins that game against a normal Clemson, or with a normal Clemson defense on the other side that can tackle a quarterback. So I just think it was a weird year. Indiana, it was a weird year for them schedule-wise and all that. Well, and we may get another one of those, but I agree with you. I do think the SEC does get the benefit of the doubt a lot. I just don't think they get as much of a benefit of the doubt as the SEC people want.
Visiting with Roddy Jones here on the program. Check him out, ESPN and SiriusXM all season long. As a running back, I can ask you this question because I don't know. You know, people always say, how the quarterback, how does a quarterback injury change the line? Jam Miller is out for Alabama, and the line has moved 0 points. And I'm looking at Alabama's quarterback room in this matchup, and I already was thinking Florida State might be a little sneaky two-touchdown dog in this game. But I do not see a lot that I love about Alabama if Jam Miller's not playing this opener. How worried are you, or how worried should we be about Alabama, given that absence?
I don't think at all, man. Like, I could stand to be proven wrong, and I would love to be proven wrong for you know, the work that I do, particularly on ACC Network. I don't know how Florida State stays in this game. I really don't. Everything that we are going on with Florida State is based on projection. Literally everything. It was the worst offense in the country last year. The defense was highly disappointing last season. So they go and get a whole new crop, and everything that we are projecting with these guys is if they all hit, chances are they won't all hit. And even if they do all hit, from a talent standpoint, they are way out-talented by Alabama. Alabama's got two defensive linemen that could very well be first-round picks, and Tim Keenan and LT Overton. Florida State on the other side has an offensive line of a bunch of guys who were at different places last year, like four guys that they got in via the transfer portal with a ton of starts. But, like, Luke Pettibone was a Wake Forest recruit. He's going against LT Overton, who reclassified from one class to the class above and was still the number one overall recruit. Like, it's just different weight classes here that we're talking about. And then you look on the offensive side, they've got an All-American center at Alabama. They've got a left tackle that could be the number one pick in the draft. They've got Ryan Williams, who could be, who will be the second receiver taken next year after Jeremiah Smith. They've got Jeremy Bernard, who I've seen mocked as a first-round pick. They've got Isaiah Horton, who has the potential to be a first-round pick. Offensive line should be one of the best in the country. You looked on defense. I talked about the defensive line. They've got Deontay Overton at linebacker, who could be an All-American. They've got two corners that are phenomenal. Like, I don't know how you can look at Florida State and say, yep, that team can hang with Alabama without doing some incredible mental gymnastics of, well, if James Williams hits and Roydell Williams has a better year and if Luke Pettibone can stand up and if Squirrel White can be more consistent and if Deuce Robinson can step in a number one role. Oh, and by the way, and if Tommy Castellanos can improve because he was statistically the worst quarterback in the ACC last year. I don't see it, man. I don't. So I think Alabama rolls.
All right, so let's talk Florida State while you're on. I mean, how do you approximate? Do you just go 6-6 because they might look good half the time and they might not? I mean, what do you do when you've got to nail this thing, at least for, you know, before we play any games and we see for ourselves? What are you doing with this roster given the amount of unknown that you've rightly pointed out?
I would say sitting and waiting to see them play, but I, you know, we're not paid to do that. So I look at the roster and I look at the pieces and I say, okay, at worst, this team is probably an average ACC team. And so, you know, you look at the non-conference schedule and you go down and you see an Alabama. You've got a Florida who they're probably not as talented as, although I think it's closer. And you say, okay, well, can they win either of those two? Can they beat a Clemson? Can they beat a Miami? I think the answer in those four is you can't count on it. So you kind of start at 8-4. Then you look at the rest of the schedule and say, can they get six? I think the answer is probably, because an average ACC roster, you would imagine, with talent at some positions, I do think it'll be more talented than some teams that they play, should be able to get six wins out of the rest of that schedule, especially with East Texas Commerce or wherever they play next week. So, you know, I think this is a roster that has the potential to be very talented. I just think when you're talking about Alabama, who I think – Alabama's my pick to win the SEC. So I think when you look at that at Alabama, that's a different weight class that we're talking about. Clemson's a different weight class that we're talking about than you know, North Carolina or the rest of the ACC schedule. That's more of an apples-to-apples comparison, at least right now.
All right, time for a couple more of Roddy Jones. All right, so I'm looking at the ACC picture, and I see Clemson up there, and nobody at ACC, you were there, nobody at ACC kickoff was like, openly saying with their mouths, any name but Clemson. And then you look at that next tier, and it's like, okay, SMU, Louisville, and Miami, they're all playing each other. Let's just say that's a tier. Who is the SMU from last year that's got the schedule and the chops and the coaching and all this stuff? And I see your Yellow Jackets, and they're just waiting back there, and they're going to be underdogs twice. They're going to be underdogs against Clemson. They're going to be underdogs against Georgia, who they were better than last year. Roddy, how confident are you? Ben Milstead's got Georgia Tech over 7.5. He's feeling good about it.
Oh, yeah.
How confident are you in the Yellow Jackets making a push there to play in Charlotte?
I'm a Georgia Tech fan, so not very confident. We've been burned, man.
Like, oh, man.
Historically, whenever there are expectations around this Georgia Tech team, Georgia Tech program, not this team, it doesn't go well. You know, the last time there was this much hype around a team was probably 2015, the year after the Orange Bowl appearance. And that team ended up 3-9. The time before that was 2010. We were coming off an ACC championship in 2009, and then in 2010 we went 6-6. I don't think either of those that this team will crater the way either of those teams did. They're built differently. There's reasons that I think things will be different. But Georgia Tech cannot play down to the level of its competition in games where it is favored, and it's going to be favored, as you rightly said, in 10 games this year, most likely, unless you have, you know, one of these teams pop up and just be better than we expect. So I am confident they will have a better year than a year ago where they were 7-6. And the year before that where they were 7-6. But ACC championship is a little rich for me until this Georgia Tech team can prove that it's not going to lose to somebody that they're not supposed to. And that's really the secret, man. Like, SMU won the games they were supposed to win, and they won the close games, and they won the toss-up games, and they won when they didn't play well, and they won when they played well. That's the secret if you're going to have a special season.
All right, let me, because you played on that 2010 team. You were on the 09 team, too. What was that team missing that this team needs?
So, in 09, we had incredible playmakers. Jonathan Dwyer, Demaryius Thomas, Joshua Nesbitt, Derek Morgan on defense, Morgan Burnett. Like, we had a lot of NFL guys. All of those guys, except for Nesbitt, left after 2009. And so, when we got into crunch time, everybody was sort of looking around like, okay, who's going to make the play? And we were looking at Stephen Hill, and we were looking at, you know, David Sims, or we were looking at, you know, Kevin Washington when Nesbitt got hurt. And people were probably looking at me. And they were like, who's going to make the play? And all of us were just looking around at each other, and nobody stepped up to make it. Like, nobody – we didn't have that belief. In 09, we believed we needed a play. We handed the ball to Dwyer. He was going to make it. We threw the ball to Bebe. He was going to catch it. In 2010 – we both didn't have the belief and didn't have the playmakers. Like, those guys didn't make the catch. They didn't make the run, which is where I think this Georgia Tech team is different. They have those guys that have done it in the past. And so when people look around, Hans King's still there. Jamal Haynes is still there. Malik Rutherford's still there. They bring in Eric Rivers. You know, that's kind of what they have that those teams in the past didn't have. Same with the 2014 team. Like, that 2014 team lost an NFL guard in Shaq Mason, an NFL tackle in Adam Gotsis, and then a ton of experience at the running back positions. And so that next year, they just didn't have the playmakers. So it really doomed both of those teams.
Roddy, we got to let you run, man. I appreciate the time. Let's do this again soon. By the way, if you build it, they will come. You got to leave two seats in that booth in case Travis Swift and his fiance Taylor end up coming. You got to build it so they come, man.
Dude, I will exit the booth if that happens. Like, I will cede my spot. You can have my seat, Mr. and Mrs. Swift.
Awesome. We'll be watching, brother. Take care.
All right. See y'all.
All right. Roddy Jones. Great stuff. I love that guy. When we come back, Tyler Brown is going to join us. Talking a little Clemson wide receiver room right after this.
Actual price will depend on product and subscription plan, featured products, or compound.